session number 24691, rule 6.
Mr. MacDonald, rule 6. You've arrived in Malta.
Yeah.
And you're just talking of the fact that, you know, you were in your early days.
Peace.
It was quiet at that time.
Very quiet, you see. I say we even had a game of cricket against somebody, I forget who it was, and football and things like that. And there was no problem whatsoever.
Did the Maltese keep apart from you? They didn't welcome you in any way?
They were, you know, mixed it. Well, a lot of the people that were on there, I had two brothers. You see, the three regiments that were on there was the Devons, the Dorsets and the West Kents. Well, I had two brothers in the Devons. Well, I met up with them, you see. One was 2 years younger, the other one was 4 years younger than me. And we'd both been in the same school in Bank Street. They went to the Devons, I went to the Durhams. But anyway, the thing about it was, you see, that I seen them a couple of times, and this was the first time I'd seen them since I was doing it. But the elder one, of the two of them, he was a good boxer, and he was a featherweight champion in pure services. Anyway, the illustrious came in there, the big aircraft carrier, and they had this big tournament, boxing tournament, you know. Anyway, went down good, very good. Anyway, the thing about it was, you see, that our job, you see, in the, as it is today, there was only one air job, you see. But now, in the wartime, there was two. We were on the second one, Takali, they called it. Now, Takali was down below the military hospital that was on the doors above, you see. And down below was this air job. Well, I don't know why they built it. Anyway, the thing about it was that we were slit trenches around it, and then we had to prepare stone sangers like for the spits, because when we got there, there was only three aircraft, three gladiators, Faith, Hope and Charity, you know what I mean? And they used to go around there. Anyway, the thing about it was, you see, that the Germans had no problem with catching them, because I think we could have caught them, though, that bloody slow. But the thing about it is, you see, we've been there about a couple of months when they suddenly, we got our first raise when he started pushing back down towards Alamein. And we were dug in around that. And our job there was, you see, we all had bikes. And as soon as the all clear went, we had dashed down to the air job, and it all had to be fueled in, ready
to make
sure that it was serviceable. But also, we had, as the planes landed, we had to fill them up with petrol. See? So they could take off for us, anyway. And anyway, I forget when it was, I think it was in June of that year or something, when the aircraft carrier, the Australian American aircraft carrier came in. I think it was the Eagle or something like that, with their Spitfires on. That was the first Spitfires we got. And they landed on with the first Spits, and we had to have all the twinsies ready for them. Well, at that time, he was bombing with Stukas. Well, they were coming up on the rooftops, in about 100 feet less, and they were using these sticky bombs and things like that. They were that bloody low, see? And they come down screaming down, like, God, eh? And I mean,
and this was whilst you were trying to protect the aircraft from
Well, we were, if we were caught on the ground, we had our own a Bren on the 2 inch, you see.
The Bren guns?
Yeah, we had that was when a special pan came out for anti-aircraft on the gun, on the Bren. But the laughable thing about it was, you see, there was one of their bloody pilots, his Korean name was a Canadian, Skewbone Berlin, I don't remember him. He was an idiot, he was, literally. But every time he was caught on the ground, he'd come dashing into our trenches. I want to find a Bren, he said. He'd come dashing in amongst our people. And he used to say, I like being amongst your blokes because you're just as daft as me. he used to be a character. What happened to him, I don't know. Skewbone Berlin.
Did you lose any men being killed through the bombing raids?
I can't honestly remember. I don't think we lost very many.
At the height of the raids, were they coming in every day? And
every day. We were the worst, heaviest bombed place in the world at that time. I mean, we were getting raids of 100 north and things like that. And it was always opened up with the Stukas coming in first off, giving you a good rattling. But they give you a good warning because you kept your head down then. And then
must have been very frightening.
Terrible. But you see, the thing about it was, what annoyed me most of all was that Mulder, if you went into Mulder Harbour, then you'd see all the holes in the sides of the wicket where they used to hide, you see. Us idiots were intense. But the laughable thing about it was, they get presented with the George Cross. We got out. Then after 50 years, the Maltese government suddenly realised there was somebody defending their island, so we got that. But we got nothing off the British government. Got nothing off the British government for Tobruk, you see. But the Australians presented a special medal for theirs.
How bad did the rationing get?
Oh, very bad. Well, you see, there in that country there, they used to have a lot of likes of tomatoes and things like that, you see, because and there you could and fruit and things like that off the trees, you know what I mean? Like lemons and oranges and they were growing all over the bloody place, you know what I mean? But
could you buy things from the civilians?
No. They had most of their own. They were hard to get their own. Our worst doings was, you see, even during the heavy part of the siege, we were still allowed to go into the capital of Valletta, you see. See, and I spent my 24th birthday on there, and laughable. And I woke up with a bloody tattoo on my front arm. Anyway, what happened was, you see, that there was no beers and that. It was just his arm beat. It was the dregs off the wine, you know. That was terrible, it was. Anyway, you only had a couple of bottles of that and you were well away. Anyway, what happened was, you see, that we were about 2 miles outside of the Valletta, where 2 miles was nothing to us. We could walk about five in them days. Hit the multi, get a good skin full of these bloody doings. And anyway, I woke up next morning, you know, God, I was gone mad. So I said to my what the hell is this? You asked for it and you've got it. I said, oh, who asked for it? I said, I didn't ask for it.
You're too drunk.
Oh, I didn't know nothing about it. And then I woke up next morning, I've got this tattoo on me. I said to myself, I've gone for 6 years or one, I've never. There, I'll get a 1 year. So anyway.
When a ship did come in, a supply ship, were you involved in unloading them as well?
No.
You didn't get involved in that?
No. It was a. There was a. Most of the Maltesers were doing most of that, I think. But they come into some right message. One was in the half, and there was a tanker came in. It lost half its load. But we weren't involved in that at all. We were just involved in any counter attack that was coming in, just in case the.
Did you have any invasion scares?
We tried, yes, we had a couple. Because, you see, we were on the coast where we were. We tried to land in that way. Well, we had trenches, took just about 200 or 300 yards off of it. And we were told this, and I don't know how far it was, but we had submarines, a couple of submarines used to patrol. Not ship because you couldn't, but. And so, how it happened, I don't know. But anyway, they supposed to have made a raid with E boats. You see, they are 2-inch boats. And the Navy sprinkled the water with oil, set fire to it. See, how they managed to do that, I didn't know. But anyway, and then all we had to do was then, as soon as they came to site, open up, well, we must have done a good job because we got about 2 or 3 dozen dead Germans come floating up onto the beach. So
was this a night attack by the enemy? Were the Germans coming in at night or was it
dawn.
During the day?
Dawn. We used to stand by dawn and dusk. Every turn, as soon as the sun broke, you were out there on the line. Anyway, this was the same in Mulder, you see. And this was a dawn attack from Buttercup. But as I say, we knew that they'd attack because we got quite a number of bodies were there.
Did your section get involved in the action?
Oh, well, we were all in. It was our area that got it. But they picked on the wrong people. They should have picked further down the beach, they'd have been all right. They're not with our people, no. We didn't use to spare anybody.
And when you weren't in your action situation, you were basically like a labour battalion, just labouring to
Oh, our job was to, as soon as the all clear went, to get down on that air drum and make sure that all them holes were filled and so the planes could land take off, you know what I mean? And also, as soon as they landed, we got the Air Force had to fill them up, petrol. We used to fill them up the way they used to go. And then we'd go back. And so down we'd come again. We'd be coming up and down about four or five times a day, maybe more.
Did you stay in the one place when all the time that you're on, Walter?
Yeah.
I was in the same place.
Yeah. I know we were just outside of about Dingley. It was a little village. We were just in this village called Dingley. We were stationed actually in there. And then we had this, this old monastery affair where all the kids were and all that. We were dug in around that. And
did you provide coastal patrols during the day and in the night? Did you patrol the coast in your area?
At night we just have a normal patrol, you know what I mean? But we had to have our own doings out, you know what I mean? Just like you saw the own battalion. No.
You'd have your patrols, our pickets out.
Yeah.
What other memories have you got of Malta?
Not really, buddy.
So you were there about a year, weren't you?
18 months.
18 months.
We left there. I'll tell you, I know the exact date because we left there. We did it in January. It was in June. That's what they say, War Office say. Because I think it was later than that, but they say it was June. Anyway, see, what happened was, you see, that we applied to the Maltese government for that. You see? Well, at that time, the grounds. The medal. See, and at that time, you see, the grandson, I said, oh, well, you might as well have that one, and also I applied. And then they sent back and says, and they sent a letter to the Wake Up. Corporal Mike Sermon served with the 1st Battalion of Durham from so and so till June. And then moved on. They always used to be part of your way, could then moved on, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And where did you go?
Where did we go from there? Well, we went back to Palestine, to Haifa. That was when before we made the raid on the Kos.
And what were you doing in Palestine?
Just ordinary training and but we didn't need reinforcing because we hadn't lost all that money, you see. Anyway, we were training and all that. And the idea was, you see, that they were going to go in by landing craft, you see, into Kos. But every day we set this standby and we said to be fully full packed and they dashed down to the village where we got the harbour. Oh, she's through off in the end. But in the end, we flew in Dakotas. DC-9s, you see, in Kos. Well, Kos at that time, all the islands were occupied by the Germans, Crete, Rhodes and everywhere, see. This was, but there's an island there that I've never ever heard anybody mention. And yet it was our brigade headquarters, Leros. And I don't know if they changed the name of it away, but it was the biggest island. And that was our HQ. I'll tell you, I know the reason why that was, you see, because we were getting air raids, but they were just pestering us more than this. They weren't bothering us, really. But everything had to be landed by chute. They couldn't land, you see. Anyway, you see, we had a good fortune to shoot a bloody German aircraft down, and we got this German bloody pilot, you see, and I got the job of taking him to bloody Leros, me and a couple of the lads.
He was alive, was he?
Oh, he would have been, Lord, if he had kept quiet. He was keep on shouting off, and my mate says, you don't shout, you're going to... Oh. He says, look, Ginger, another word out of you, mate, and you're dead, we just saw you over the side. Oof. Anyway, the thing about it was that we went by landing craft in, and then we went into Leros, you see, and as I say today, we had him over, and that was it. But nobody ever mentions that island, even the holy tours and things like that. So whether it's been changed the name, I don't know.
So the battalion was on course,
yeah.
But brigade headquarters was on another island.
Leros. I think it was Leros anyway, yeah.
What about Kos itself? Where were you stationed there? Were you in the town of Kos?
All these are dull memories, honestly. I can't remember anything about it. I think we were under canvas, I think, but there was very few people on there. You see, I mean, as I say, the Italians had it, you see, and they buggered off and left them. But
why were you there? Why did they send you there?
Well, you see, that was fairly obvious, you see, because we wanted a foothold in Greece, you see. Well, they had Crete and roads and got, you see, so we could come from Italy, because we were going into Italy then, going through Italy, and if we had Kos and Leros, we had a big stepping stone to get that into doings. But you see, he got wise for that.
And what happened? What are your memories of being on Kos?
Not much of it. We used to, I don't think I have any memories at all. But the thing about it was, you see, we'd only been on there about a month when Lord Haw gave us a warning. Men of the 1st Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry, if you don't get off Kos, we're going to blast you off Kos. He did it, no. One morning, the air raid warning went, and never, all clear never went yet. Of course, it's landed by sea, same as it on Crete and Rhodes. I see where we were absolutely. But we only had 500 men on there, you see.
And the Germans came in, what, by parachute or landing craft?
Everything. Landing craft, land, sea, land and air. We hurled them off for about a couple of days or something, I think.
What are your memories of that fighting?
We were fighting the rear guard action now. But there's, oh, guy, I'll tell you more about it than really. Anyway, see, and our platoon was trying to hold a line so our people could get back towards the doings, you see. And as I say, they were going right through us and reforming, trying to reform back. But we lost a lot of men. And to be honest, we lost our QMS because he was killed in
there. Was there any attempt made to give you support by air or
no.
Sea?
Not to my knowledge, I don't know. But anyway, what happened was, you see, that we got forced right away back, see. As I say, as the last of them were going through, we were the last on the line, our company, our platoon, and my section of the I had a platoon commander with me, and Smitty, he's a queer bugger, he was. He was from the Shropshire Yeomanry, you see. About 6'4" he was. He looked stupid amongst our people, about 5'8" in there.
What was his name?
Smith. He was a smashing bloke, he was, you see. Gentle, real gentleman. Everything, he used to say, I dreaded this day. So I said, what was that for? He said, I'll be honest with you, he says. We all just come from Sanders, and we're in the way court. And they said, we're going to join these different way courts, he says. He said, but I'll be very honest with you. If you join the DLI, you better start making your will out. I said, that's a bloody good start. Anyway, he said, no, he said, I'm telling you the honest truth. He said, all the officers there amongst us, they're crapping us over because we're going to join our lot, because they knew we got, we honestly, we got all this shit waiting. Every dirty engagement, we got it.
So what happened to you then when the Germans were really on top of you?
Well, you see, I don't know how close they were to us, because we got right back, you see. Then all of a sudden, an order came through saying, you've either got to capitulate or go and fight in the hills, you see. So, I had, at that time, I had the officer with us, and John was with us, and...
Hawksworth.
And this lad from another section, John Guy, the young lad, and all our lot had just gone back. Anyway, and we said, what are we going to do? So I said, well, look, I don't know if you remember, I said, but early in the war, it was always said that if you're a prisoner of war once, the second time you were shot, you see? So I said to him, look at that, like, I said, I was already a prisoner of war, I've got no other option. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, I was a prisoner of war in Syria, wasn't I? I said, if they find out, it's my number is up, so I'm going, oh, well, we'll all go and fight in the Brazils. Well, that was the end of that. So anyway, that was it. That ended up. Anyway, so we decided that they were going to... So we asked this, that lad that I have a prisoner of war card of. I said, sir, are you going to come with us? He said, I'm sorry, sir, I can't, because I'm the only senior NCO left in there doing it, you see, I'll have to stay. So he got prisoner of war. But anyway, we got away to the... We made our way up to the hills. Of course, it was like Italy, all little white farmhouses, you know, all over, see? So we made our way towards the causeway, and we got into this little white farmhouse, you see, settled in for the night.
And was there a family in it?
No, nobody was in any of them. It was just goats were roaming around free and everything. They'd all gone. They'd all gone. I don't know where they'd gone, but there was nobody.
And how'd you move at night? Did you have to move at night so you weren't seen? When you decide to go up into the hills, did you move at night or during the day?
I'm not certain, but I think we moved during the day. I think we went during the day, and we picked on this farmhouse. You know, we weighed up the situation around. We said we'd take one on the outskirts, you know, not one in the middle. So anyway, we got into this joint, got settled in, and that's when we first tasted that bloody chocolate emergency ration. We decided that each of us would take a turn to boil up to make a brew, you see. But it was just before it was coming dark, so we could light a fire on that. So we had a doors. And then...
A cup of tea?
That cocoa.
Oh, the cocoa with the chocolate.
Emergency ration. Anyway, what happened then was, you see, that naturally we were very hungry, but then we couldn't do anything about that. So we said... the turn commander, I said, well, what we do, he says, we take in turns, me as well, he says, we take in turns to patrol around the doors while you people sleep, all right? He says, and every 2 hours we relieve each other, all right, fair enough. Anyway, the thing about it was, there was one of these big German, like, gunboats with a big searchlight going round and round, see, so... We watched him go around, and when he disappeared, we come back and all. This went on for about 3 or 4 nights, you see.
So you're in this one farm 3 or 4 nights. And yeah. How many of them were you, did you say?
In there was 4. There was a joint commander, John Hawksworth, 3 of us.
So you had this officer, this tall officer,
yeah.
And John Hawksworth.
And me.
And yourself.
That's all. But then, after about 2 days, we suddenly... Oxford brings his bloke in from the British doings. So he was the squadron leader that was doing the parachuting. He was in charge of dropping the parachutes for our group and all that. He was a great state. And he had this little tin milking or something, fresh water. So anyway, we cooked with him, we got the fresh water off him. Anyway, he joined us then, see.
And what was his name?
Hurst, I think it was. But he was a joke. Anyway, when we got into Turkey, he was the one who was going to provide us with little paddles. And we didn't even see him again, anyway. But the thing about it was, you see, anyway, we got him in, you see. So then, on the daytime, we used to patrol the beach, go and see what we could scrounge.
Are you still in this farmhouse?
Yes. It was only about a couple of 100 yards off the beach. That was our idea, you see, because we thought, so well... If he lands, he'd barely go farther in. Anyway, what that was, you see, that we searching around, and we seen all these props. A bit.
Wood?
Longer now, a bit.
Logs.
A bit 8 foot long now, I see. So we collected together a bit of a dozen of them, and we found a couple of big bales of barbed wire. So anyway, we waited the next day to see if he was coming around with his bike. He came round on the night time again, like just doing the round and away. 3 nights when he did that. Then the fourth night he wasn't there. So we decided. Anyway, we decided to bind this these rafts up with this barbed wire. So it made a raft. Anyway, we made a raft of it, see? And we picked up these high tire shovels. Well, the high tire shovels were about 6 foot, bloody 4 foot, eh? Hey. Well, anyway, you see? So we made a plan. We said, all right, now, do you think it'll just float? Well, not really. We've got no other option. We had to float whether we liked it or not.
What kind of size was it? Do you know its measurements approximately? What kind of size was it?
Maybe they were about 8 foot long, aren't they? And we got about six of them together and tied the barbed wire around them, you see. And the idea was that he was going to be in the middle, you see.
Who was that?
The officer. He was 15 stone man, he was. Well, anyway, he was laughable, because then we were on the corners, you see, four of us, on each corner. So he was doing his shouting, you know. Anyway, the thing about it was, as soon as we got in the water, we were up to here.
Up anyway, your chest.
Oh, so we got away. Anyway, you see. And
and you were using these Italian shovels as oars, were you?
Yeah. And he was shouting at the yard. Anyway, the thing about it was, you see, White Turkey's only 3 miles away, you see. This is about 10 o'clock at night. About 10 o'clock, or 12 o'clock the next day, we're still going strong. We're still about half a mile off the British shore, you see. See, in the bed there, you've got an ebb. You sort of go forward and you're coming back with it, you see. Well, we're getting no farther forward when we've got to about half a mile off the shore. So he, Smitty has a big idea. He said, I was a champion swimmer when I was at school, college. Harrow, Eaton, something like that, he was, I think. Anyway, he says, I'll swim to the shore and get help. Well, he dives on the side, he went straight under. Well, he was knackered, you see. By the time we tried to drag him on, that's exactly what we wanted, because he took the bloody lot of us into the bloody water. Anyway, tried to drag him on, boy, I mean. Okay. We tried to drag him on now, and we come the bloody lot. So we got behind it, and we pushed it into the...
So you swam pushing it in?
Yeah. You know, just pushed it into the sewer. As soon as we got there, we were put into these... The police took us over. We got into...
Had you been able to put a mast up on the raft?
No. Not like that.
Did you get worried that it might sink whilst you were out to sea?
We could... Well, it was pointless. I mean, we could... You know what I mean? We were just hoping that somebody would come along and pick us up. Anyway, there's no fear of the British picking us up. Anyway, the thing about it was, you see, as I say... the raft tipped over and that was it. We got into the shore. As soon as we landed at the shore, the police were down in a shot and they took us into the police stations.